most of you watching this right now are probably supposed to be following the NGSS, but you don't really know if you are, or you don't know where to begin, or you're looking for a less complicated method. Well, you found it.
In this episode,
I'm going to talk specifically just about the cross-cutting concepts of science, because they are so central to us designing active learning experiences for our students, regardless of the standards that we're supposed to be following in our state or in our classroom. More importantly, we want to be able to transform those cross-cutting concepts into prompts we can use for ourselves when we're planning and for our students when they're working with the materials we've given them. I'm Lisa from Lab in Every Lesson, and I want you to lock away your lecture notes for good. On this channel, I focus on helping you find opportunities to create meaningful moments so that your students experience lasting learning. There are 7 named cross-cutting concepts of science in the NGSS. Now, before we dive into them, what is a cross-cutting concept anyway? Aside from this really flow off the tip of your tongue kind of jargon that the NGSS has given it, the way I see a cross-cutting concept is a practice of science. It's a science skill that is typically part of analysis, that's part of sense making, that's part of critical thinking. Because we have our regular scientific method-like processes, our science cycle, if you will, where we observe and we ask questions and we cite specific evidence, but then we have to do something with all of that information. We have to learn from it as scientists, as people in the real world, taking in our surroundings, making informed decisions. And it's these practices that are going to transverse what happens in your science classroom to what happens in real life for your students as they become young adults and go on to do great things. And let me just say for clarity purposes, if you are out there using the NGSS and you're already quite familiar with it or in your process of learning it, you know that those standards call out specific cross-cutting concepts for you to use alongside or as a mechanism of teaching specific core ideas. So I'm not trying to reroute anybody in that regard. I'm trying to speak to the masses here and just, like I said, help you ditch your lecture notes and get to something. Just put one foot in front of the other to make learning active, not just once a week on your lab day, but every day. So let's dive in. The very first one, and the one I absolutely rely upon the most, are patterns. Because when I create an activity for my students, I am heavily leaning on observation skills. Observation skills kind of almost as a lowest level rung in its own taxonomy of learning, where everyone can make an observation. Everyone makes different degrees of detailed observations, but absolutely everyone can make an observation. So my job becomes organizing what I know or expect the students to see in a way that they'll be able to pick out some patterns. So if we were to more formally define this idea of patterns, we would say they are anything that kind of repeats or becomes a trend or a similarity. As teachers, we can use patterns in activities to demonstrate for students how they can rely on this same effect or this same outcome in a specific type of system all the time. If you're just starting out creating an activity and you've identified a resource for your students to use, here are some simple questions you might think about as you're planning for students to identify patterns, or these are questions you can actually embed in your activity for students to prompt students to identify these patterns. We have, what patterns do you observe in the data? That's a pretty obvious and direct one. Can you identify any regularities or recurring trends? How can we represent these patterns visually or mathematically? And what predictions can we make based on the observed patterns? You notice there's a couple words that show up in there. Certainly trends and predictions. Honestly, that last question, what predictions can we make based on the observed patterns? That really is sort of what I would consider in my own lesson planning process, a data-dependent question. One of those big higher order thinking questions, because it asks students not just to identify the pattern. Are the numbers increasing? Is the color getting more vibrant? Whatever the pattern might be, but actually then to use it and say, this will always happen in the species of bird, or this will always happen to the mass of elements in a periodic table. It's something that allows them to connect to that next step, to applying their new knowledge. Cause and effect is our second cross-cutting concept we're talking about, and that's also pretty self-explanatory. Cause and effect is going to be huge for those of you who teach life science, absolutely, because living creatures, they rely on so much interdependence. Cause and effect really explores the connection, the relationships between events and phenomena. Now, the identification of relationships between ideas is a pretty higher order, sophisticated thinking. It's really not a surface level task. But in my experience, when I'm working with students, sometimes it's the things that are so natural to them already that they take for granted. They might observe cause and effect and not even think to mention what they're seeing in their observations because that seems too simple. But truly, cause and effect is another cross-cutting concept that allows students to apply that learned knowledge to real situations later on. For example, when they know what causes an earthquake, they can better understand where and when they might occur. So two questions here that I think will be really valuable to you as you're planning and looking at a resource and thinking, how can I get students to see this, is to consider what factors or variables are influencing the outcomes, because those are the things you really want students to see and document. Then, how can we determine the relationships and the phenomenon? What are the students going to have to do with their resource, whether they're reading or watching or manipulating something? What are they going to have to do to actually experience that cause and effect relationship? And then, some follow-up questions you can have for your students while they're working through the activity are, what evidence supports that this caused this effect? And are there any alternative explanations? Ooh, that's a money question, because that's one of those questions that gets to multiple correct answers. Wide open ideas. The more kinds of questions like that you ask in your classroom, the more your students' confidence will increase. They'll be willing to share their out-of-the-box thinking, and you'll be able to praise them for maybe, we don't know the answer, maybe that's a possibility. What a bright idea. Now we shift a little bit to this idea of size, proportion, and quantity. So here we're really dealing with content that deals with maybe measurements. Again, thinking about my own content in chemistry, a lot of the lab focus is spent on students measuring and finding a meniscus, measuring liquid volumes, and just measurements in general, converting measurements using dimensional analysis. What this cross-cutting concept does is really tries to get us to focus on and think about the fact that scale or size or magnitude or quantity is really or might be really important to the observations that we're making. Another chemistry specific example is, of course, the mole, and the fact that it's really hard to experience and know when we see or identify a mole. But other examples would include the size of the sun. You know, the distance we are from the sun, this is totally a size and proportion problem, because it looks small from where we stand, but it's not small at all. Even in biology, when we're talking about cells versus the size of an entire creature. So considering some questions for your planning when you are faced with these types of scenarios, these types of core ideas and problems, things you might want to consider with your resource, how you're going to write your task instructions, and maybe the artifacts students will produce. First up, can we use math or graphs to analyze the relationships between scale and quantity? How does it change in response to maybe some other factors? And what are the implications of different scales or proportions on the behavior of properties of the system? So something that comes to mind there would be biology and the regular occurrence of specific nucleotides in the DNA sequence or an RNA sequence that codes for genes. That would be an implication of different quantity, not so much size and proportion, but certainly different quantity. Now, those two questions I think are pretty super hyper focused on your planning and guiding your planning. But these two questions could be posed to students or things you want to think about how you would frame them for students. How does the size or quantity of one component relate to the others in a system? I'm here in chemistry and I'm thinking about when we're talking about equilibrium and Le Chatelier's principle, where we overwhelm the system with one reactant to force the reaction to completion. Whereas if we have equal amounts, we have a limiting reactant. And so that would be definitely a place where we would want to prompt students to look deeper. And next, what happens when we change the scale or proportion? Now, both of those questions deal with possible resources where your students will actually be able to observe how a size change or a proportion change or a scale change will produce an outcome, and they'll be able to consider their observations to actually answer questions like that. Systems and system models are something every single one of us, no matter the content we teach, must address at some point in our curriculum. Whether we are teaching earth science and talking about the layers of the earth, or space science and the layers of the atmosphere, I guess that would be environmental science, biology and the components of a cell, or anatomy and physiology, the components of your body. In chemistry, we talk about the components of an atom and how those atoms build to molecules and those molecules build to macromolecules, and so on and so forth. Systems and system models require students to know the components, know what the component jobs are, how they interact with each other. And so understanding and addressing system and system models works straight up through a taxonomy of learning or a depth of knowledge, really from the very basic recall the parts to how does it all work together. Now, one way specifically when you're teaching system and system models for you to go deeper with your students is to consider finding a resource that would allow your students to actually modify the model or look at various versions of the model. For example, one type of cell versus a plant cell versus an animal cell, right? I'm not good with this stuff, but I'm thinking eukaryote versus prokaryote. And if you could actually change the pieces there. For me in chemistry, we could look at two different atoms because they have the basic same component parts, but maybe, and they're in the same places, you can identify them, but there's huge differences between them. But in any more simplistic activity or getting really to the basics of learning the system and the system models, some questions you want to get to your students or get them to think about, prompt them, include: what are the component parts? This is very depth of knowledge, level one, recall. How do these components interact and influence each other? So again, focus on not telling them about all you know about these interactions, but having them find and sort out themselves. And there's a bit of cause and effect built into anything where we're studying relationships and interactions. So be mindful that a lot of these cross-cutting concepts, they do cross-cut each other in a sense. Now, the NGSS is huge on modeling. They definitely always want students to create models. But in science, I think, especially if you're going the route of having students uncover and discover through the use of dynamic resources that you can maybe find online, students are going to be working with those models. So sure, they should be able to identify them later on and maybe recreate them, but I am totally a proponent for them working through them to determine all the other aspects of it, rather than somehow sourcing all the aspects and then putting it together themselves. Then we get to energy and matter. Totally foundational concepts in all of science. Probably a concept that every student is experiencing at every grade level, all the way from kindergarten. This too is also kind of a built-in cause and effect and a built-in relationship piece, but we're focusing on specifically on the relationship between energy and matter and how energy flows through systems and how matter can change in response to those energy changes. In lessons where energy and matter is a cross-cutting concept, we're really exploring how energy is transferred, converted, and conserved, as well as the properties that it creates or changes. Again, one earth science-like core idea that I'm thinking about is volcanoes. You know, we have the actual lava that comes out of the earth, the actual matter and that spews forth, but part of the reason it explodes and part of the reason it's so hot and creates fire is because there's so much energy involved. Even earthquakes result from the movement of plates underneath the earth and the energy and the consequence that is that. So again, it's really hard to escape that idea of cause and effect. And even, I would say, if we're talking about earthquakes in particular, my son is learning about earthquakes right now, so it's top of mind for me. I'm thinking that even patterns are built into this concept because there are places in the world where there are more fault lines and occurrence of earthquakes than others. But again, if you are using the NGSS, someone smarter than me has already sorted out what you should be focusing on there. If you're not using the NGSS or you're just trying to sort it out, it's okay for you to go after any of these. You know why? Because your students' learning is most important, not the boxes you're checking and the standards. Okay, just had to say that. So the questions I have for you here are all questions you really can present to your students in the context of whatever activity you're creating for them, whatever resource you've asked them to observe. How is energy transferred or transformed within the system? What are the different forms of energy involved? How can we track the flow of matter or energy through the system? And how does the conservation of energy or matter apply in this situation? This idea really should be mainlining through the entire students, like kindergarten through grade 12, right? And so to constantly, in my opinion, I see that as a spiral back question. That's connecting something they already know to this very specific core idea related scenario, which we're applying the idea of energy and matter. We're getting to the end. We have only two cross-cutting concepts to go. The next one is structure and function. This is a pretty, I think, specialized example of cause and effect. This is probably also pervasive through all of our content since function is a verb. You know, when we talk about energy flow and transference and conversion, and we're talking about cause and effect, we're really talking about things that happen. And structure and function is exactly that. We're talking about things that happen. And where do they come from? But not just what other event produced them, like we're really focusing on in cause and effect. Here we're talking about this thing is made in a very specific way to do a very specific thing. And so we're hyper-focused on the relationship, but maybe position and placement and properties of all of the pieces within the system. This series of questions I have for you on structure and function, I think, really span the range of critical thinking. They start out very specifically with recall and identification, listing the parts. What are the specific structures or features of the object or system? And that's a very clear task for your students to do if they're working with a resource. But then, if you have a sophisticated enough resource, if you created your own sort of setup, you can get to how do these features produce the function? What are their properties? What are the placements? What are their jobs that all together they're able to produce this function? In chemistry, we're talking about function through intermolecular forces. And this is not accomplished in one lesson. So, like, let's put on the brakes right there. Some of these questions might span your curriculum. Some of these cross-cutting concepts, you are just picking up in piecemeal and eventually knitting them all together. The next most challenging task your students might want or have to do with structure and function is think about or explore the adaptability or how those properties, the placement of the features of the system, how, if we change them, what's the outcome? And something that comes to mind here is genetics and how the, I don't know the terminology, okay, the alleles and the genes and the chromosomes, and do they do all the thing, how, if they change, how does it produce a different phenotype, right? Your genotype, your phenotype, that's what it is. The other thing I'm thinking is evolution in life science, that at one point a species needs super sharp teeth, and over hundreds of years they don't need those super sharp teeth anymore, so they don't have them, and that adaptation happens naturally. And that's a central idea to that, that's a core idea to that content. Finally, really focusing on those STEM and STEAM and engineering tasks, how can we modify the structure to improve its function? That's the job of an engineer. Basically, we just wrote a one-sentence job description. How can we make it better? And lastly, we save the best for last. Not really. This is a pretty sophisticated one, I think. It's one that is definitely specific to particular core ideas, and that is stability and change. So we've already explored energy changes to matter. We've already explored cause and effect, and both of those things kind of play in here. Stability refers to the state of equilibrium or balance within a system, and change refers to the process of transformation. So this concept explores the factors that affect stability and the causes and effects of changes in systems over time. Now, throughout this discussion today, I've thrown out anecdotal examples of various core ideas and content items in your various curriculums and courses that these ideas might apply. And consistently, I suggested and was in the questions ideas about what changes could we make? How could we adapt it or modify it? And really, those are principles of stability and change. And so again, just highlighting how intertwined all of these cross-cutting concepts are, but that some of our ideas really lend themselves uniquely to them. Again, for example, I'm thinking in my chemistry world about equilibrium and balance and change. But I'm also thinking about balance when it comes to not just equations, also a scale and proportion in chemical equations and balancing chemical equations and the whole idea of stoichiometry. But I'm also thinking about balance of protons and electrons in an atom, and how if we don't have balance, then we have ionization or chemical bonding, because the system's always trying to get to balance. In your biology content, the body needs to find equilibrium, homeostasis. It's the whole concept, okay? And I'm not really well-versed in physics, but as I read through the questions I'm about to share with you, for some reason I'm just thinking physics, because physics is so much about motion, and motion by its very identity is change. Okay, let's take a look at these questions. Is the system currently in a stable or balanced state? Why or why not? Now, time out. The next video in my series that you'll be able to watch is all about why. Why is a horrible question to ask. So absolutely, these questions are outlines and prompts for you to think about how you're organizing your activity. This one definitely not so much for students. You would definitely want to transform that to say, cite evidence and support your answer, or something like that. Factors can disrupt the stability of the system if it was stable? How does the system respond to changes or disturbances? And can we predict the long-term behavior or stability of the system? Now, I just want to throw out there that an employee, a teacher in Pennsylvania, which is a state adopting a state-specific version of these next-generation science standards, and soon required to show that I'm incorporating all of these cross-cutting concepts into my lessons, I have been sort of reflectively and retroactively going through my lessons and trying to see where I have, you know, where I have incorporated these things already. And what I can tell you is that in one lesson, I might be able to identify one question from every single one of these categories that I've used in an activity. So it might be helpful for you to actually think outside the box in that way. I think as teachers, one of the biggest problems we have, and not just teachers, really anyone that's learning something new, I definitely get so focused on this is how we do it. This is the formula. I was a chemist, okay? This is the formula. This is how we do it. This is how I will be successful. And that's just purely not the case. Don't lose sight of the big goal. The big goal is make your students do the hard work of learning. Get them to do the digging. But your role in this process is so important because you're the one that knows your content well enough to know all of the parts and all the cause and effect and all the cascade of events and all the critical core ideas that they need to know. And the challenge is in not telling them. Please remember that everything we just reviewed together isn't possible for students to do if they don't have a muse, if they don't have a subject or a system to observe and analyze. So if you want to do more of that, you want your students to learn through experimentation and direct observations, you want to stop telling them all about what you know and have them discover it for themselves. Check out this very low-cost, amazing training product I created for you, the Active Learning Action Plan. You can learn more about it at www.labineverylesson.com/activeplan. Here on the podcast and over there on YouTube, I'm telling you all about what I do. And in that program, I show you exactly how. It's all about implementation and getting it done and getting you results super duper fast. Check back with me here tomorrow for more. Thanks, guys.